I was married from home, and I'll die in America.
Welcome to our group.
And this ought to show it right here.
Do you or someone you know suffer from depression? If so, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Defender 7 Monday night broadcast with your host and our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis. And I'm your co-host and general of the Defender 7, Bobby Ormsby. Welcome. Before we get on with our show, I need to read our disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on Defender's 7 radio show and Facebook page are those of the callers and or authors and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the Defenders 7. Now, for those of you new just tuning in, we can be reached on our national Facebook page by typing in all capital letters in the search box, Defenders 7. That's Defenders, Roman numeral V as in Victor, with two large eyes. Now, before you click on that join button, just know that we expect all of our members and future members to participate in everything we do here on the Defender 7. We can also be reached and want you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Help us out. Click that subscribe button. On MeWe, click on organization, scroll down to Defenders 7, Humanitarian American Patriot Group. Now for tonight and all the shows we do here on Blog Talk Radio, we enjoy it when you call in with your own thoughts and opinions. And that number to call is 914-205-5773. Again, that number to call to participate, and I hope you all do, area code 914-205-5773. Now I'm going to turn the microphone over to your host, our Colonel, Kimberly Purvis, and we also have our Major of Wisconsin, Miss Lorna Munson, a.k.a. Slacker.
Am I unmuted?
Are you unmuted? I don't know.
I started my new job today.
Uh-oh.
Congratulations.
They got something there that I've never, ever heard of ever in my life. They have a chaplain. They have a chaplain come in there once a week.
Where is this at?
It's a sheet metal place.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, and you can take off and go for a walk if you needed to talk to them, or you can just do whatever, I guess.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah,
if
it is.
If they're worried about stress on the job.
Yeah. And I found out you can easily cut your arm off at that place.
Well, duh.
And then they have a wall that they have of anybody that worked, that was in the military, they have their own made-up little plaques about the size of a dog tag hanging up on a wall.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if you guys have noticed some of the news from the day. I want to start with the more depressing one. It's, you know, it's pretty sad, and prayers to the families. Saturday, I think it was Saturday, a teenage boy had five of his friends with him in his car in Illinois, in Hickory Hill or Hickey Hill, well, I don't know, whatever it's called. Apparently he was driving excessively fast going down the hill. And he was driving so fast that he hit a tree, he split the car in two. And four of the kids died, and only two lived. And they're charging him with four counts of reckless driving. And
now,
all of the kids – huh?
No, my nephew, ex-nephew-in-law, he was in a – well, not with that many kids, but he was in an accident, and his friend died. And they made him go to jail for 3 months and then go to jail, I think it was for a week, on the anniversary date.
Oh. Yeah, they're only charging him as a minor. He's 17. You killed four of your friends because you were driving excessively fast. You lost control of your car, and you killed four of them. And they're going to try him as a juvenile? Come on. I think that's ridiculous. The youngest one, I believe, was 14.
That's kind of a tough situation because that's something he's got to live with the rest of his life.
No, I know.
He should have to serve
juvenile until he turns 18, and then at least 5 years, minimum 5 years as an adult. I mean,
true.
Yes, he is going to have to
true.
Live with it for the rest of his life.
True, but as a person of a survivor of a crash, our person that killed three of my best friends and almost killed me only got 3 years in jail. And this guy not only didn't have a regular driver's license, but didn't even have a CDL to be driving buses. And all because of the family name is how he only got 3 years in jail.
Wow. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I mean... It's like,
and that's what Kim, you and Lorna both have been around me for so long, and you know my story. And but my thought is that was only 1 year of life, all because of who they were connected to.
No, I know. I mean, I'm sorry, but I don't think, and if he gets off, that's crap. That's condoning you to drive recklessly and say, eh, you know, you're a minor. No, no, no. Then they shouldn't be, you see, and that's all that's going to do is say that you can't drive a vehicle until you're 21. If you can't handle driving a vehicle, then you don't deserve to have a license and you shouldn't be able to drive until you're 21.
True.
I mean, they've already shown how irresponsible they are by eating Tide Pods, for crying out loud.
Right.
I think that they should, unless they can prove they're responsible, they should not have a driver's license. This is what this generation is proving now. They're
especially
not responsible.
Now, I was just going to say that, especially now, they're idiots. But, kind of got mixed emotion on that topic because I know.
Well, no, it's true. He is going to have to live with it for the rest of his life. Yes, he is. Okay, he killed
and
four of his best friends.
And I agree that he should be punished for it, absolutely, but
if he was 18 years old? Then he gets tried as an adult, and he could get 20 years. But because he's 17, he'll get
probation.
They can
charge him as an adult at 17. They can charge him as an adult at 16, actually.
No, they're not. They're charging him as a juvenile. Yeah, they're charging him as a juvenile, which is bullshit. I'm sorry. But he should have known. And then the other thing that doesn't make any sense is where it happened, the local police was 12 miles away. I guess it's in a county or something. And they're wondering why one of those police officers was in that jurisdiction. Who cares? Well, how did he get there so fast? Why was he already there? Oh, I don't know. Maybe the kid was planning it. I don't know. I mean, people are so stupid. Is the why they're worrying about why shit happens?
We had another accident up here back when I was in junior high, where one of them was one of my classmates, and then I think I was in like seventh grade at that time, and then went on up to the high school age. And there were six in one car, and I think, if I can remember right, two in the other, and they were racing. And the car with the six people in it hit the edge of the dirt and flew up over the top of a sign and killed four of them, one of them being my classmate. And I don't remember what happened. I know he got some time. I want to say he got like 10 years. Something like that.
A lot of this shit's ridiculous, what people get. So, everyone knows that China is trying to take over Taiwan or take it back or whatever. And Japan's been telling China, look, no, you can't. So China issued a statement, I guess today or yesterday, whatever, that he will use nuclear bombs on Japan repeatedly until they unconditionally surrender to China. So, they're really looking for it. That's what their thing is right now. They're looking to nuke the hell out of Japan. And what was the other thing? Hold on. And of the plane full of Democrats, five of them now tested positive for COVID, and they all got vaccinated, and none of them are quarantining. Well, they say they will, but I doubt it very seriously. And Kamala said she's not going to quarantine, which means this is all bullshit. We've been everything's gone to hell, you know, for the last year and a half over this bullshit pandemic. And lastly, before we get started, the stock market dropped 725 points today because of the new Delta variant. Yeah, The last time that happened was in 2008, and it dropped 777 points when the stock market crashed. So, yeah. It's a mess. So I think it may be the stock market that's going to do us in. So, anyway, I figured I saw this documentary today. I was on YouTube. I quit watching TV. I pretty much just watch YouTube now and movies on like Prime or whatever. And the news even irritates me, so I don't even watch the news anymore. But something very strange has been going on at Yellowstone. In the last 2 weeks, they've had 445 earthquakes. I found another one. More information about when I told you was they had 175 in one day, which is highly unusual. And then in the last 2 weeks, they've had 445. The thing about the earthquakes is they're right underneath Yellowstone Lake, and which is the caldera is underneath that. And the average earthquake was the shallow ones were about 600 feet deep, which is not good. And the deepest one was 7 kilometers, and I have no idea how far that is in miles. Don't know. But they've been having harmonic tremors as well. So they've now put, from what I saw in one of the news videos, that area has been put on alert because of it. So will it be the whole entire caldera that goes up? I don't know. They don't know. Nobody knows. They did say with the new caldera that's underneath is the size of Los Angeles County, and there's enough lava to fill the Grand Canyon 11 and a half times. That's how much is in there. And if it were to blow, and they're trying to tell you, oh, it's not going to go for another 100,000 plus years. How do you know? All it would take is a 7-point whatever magnitude earthquake to fracture and cause that whole entire caldera to blow. So they're saying the volcano itself probably won't, but an earthquake can push it along. So that's why I decided to go ahead and do tonight's show on volcanoes, super volcanoes, and all that cool shit, and earthquakes. But they said that if it does blow as a super volcano, it would cost over $3 trillion in damage. So,
I knew my dad was telling me to get the hell out of here for a reason.
Well, here's the thing. I found on the USGS, they have a new modeling app that they've created to show. You know what, I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna start with Yellowstone. So they did a distribution, an ash distribution of Yellowstone. And see, what gets me is how do they know that the volcano erupted 2.1 million years ago? And then 1.3 million, and then 600,000. How do they know? Honestly, I mean, was anybody around, walking around, that could say, hey, yeah, we had a massive volcano? I mean, yes, Bobby, they could check the soil. You know what I'm saying? They do core samples. I get that. That's fine. How
Bobby
do you
was
date
there.
Those? Yeah, Methuselah. Yeah. No, but you know what I'm saying? How are you going to say how old that is? There was no technology around. That's why I don't believe how old they say the Earth is. I don't believe on all of this shit. I just know that they could say, yeah, by the core samples and all that, yes, you can go by that and say, yeah, so many years ago, that's when, you know. But I don't think they could sit there and say definitively it was 3 million years ago, whatever. But anyway, so supposedly for the first earthquake or the first eruption of Yellowstone was the Mesa Falls ash bed. And so there's three different depths of ash that they have found. And that covered Wyoming, Nebraska, part of Kansas, and Colorado, and almost all of Colorado. That's from that one eruption. The Huckleberry Ridge ash bed is massive. It goes from Southern California all the way up into Canada, right across Idaho, that straight line from California, Nevada, Idaho, Montana, and then the Dakotas, all the way around, all of Kansas, and made a big loop. I'll send you the picture, Lorna, you can color it, because I'd like to color this one. And then the Lava Creek ash bed went even farther down, and it covered most of Texas and half of Louisiana and all that crap. But if it were to blow right now, as of how much lava is in the caldera, right? And they've done the infrared and sonic mission, and they've measured it off. So the ash would go from the center of Wyoming, right there. It would spread as far as Washington, D.C., and cover all the way down to Knoxville. So basically the Carolinas, New England, Florida, Alabama, and the bottom part of Texas will not be touched. That's how much. Right now we are in, where I'm at in Wichita, it would be a possibility of getting 10 to 30 millimeters of ash, which is a lot. Because ash from a volcano, it pretty much turns into concrete. That's why they say if it would probably kill 5 million people within that 500-mile range because of how fast the pyroclastic cloud would go. And you have 500 miles is far. And I'm not sure if it says how fast it goes, but and then everybody outside of and then zone two would be pretty much the heaviest part of the ash, and most people in that area would die to suffocation, and the farther out you go, but the problem is with all of the damage from the ash, it would kill all plant life, it'll poison all the water systems. Majority of the population in the United States would die of starvation. But I'm gonna get into it. I'm gonna go ahead and start with the volcanoes in general. So basically, a volcano on Earth is a vent or a fissure in the planet's crust, which lava, ash, rock, and gas will erupt. A volcano is also a mountain formed by the accumulation of these eruptive products. Volcanoes have existed for a long time on Earth, pretty much since day one, likely causing disasters such as the Permian mass extinction. And I don't understand how they say it was 250 million years ago, but again, I digress. Hey, you know, if you got proof, you got proof. That was the greatest mass extinction in Earth history, according to whoever wrote a paper in 2015. Volcanoes can have existed on other worlds as well. They think that there's volcanoes on the moon and on Mars. I can see Mars. It's kind of hard to believe the moon, but we don't know what the moon's made out of. So according to some people, we've never actually been to the moon. But they say there's volcanoes on Jupiter, and those are active. Researchers are currently striving to find ways to predict when volcanic eruptions might happen on Earth, by checking the crystals, the gases, and all of that that's linked with volcanoes. So the Earth's crust is 3 to 37 miles thick. That's according to a U.S. Geological Survey. And then it's broken up into 7 major and 152 smaller pieces called tectonic plates. So there's 7 major tectonic plates, and then there's 152 smaller ones. So the plates all float on a layer of magma, and that's the semi-liquid rock and dissolved gases. So it's like the two plates that's up by Russia and Antarctica, and they're pulling on each other. Those two plates up there, that's the two biggest ones that they're worried about right now. So at the boundaries of the plates where they move past or push under or moved away from each other, that's where the magma comes up that's lighter than the surrounding solid rock. So, and that's why it can either ooze up like it does in the ocean. Sometimes it'll ooze. Sometimes it'll erupt. It depends on how thick it is and how much force pushes it out. So, so magma that's been erupted is called lava, but it's still the same thing. It's basically tomatoes. So cinder cone volcanoes, also called scoria cones, are the most common type of volcano. Just like Mount Vesuvius, Mount St. Helens, all the regular volcanoes, those are cinder cone volcanoes. Hold on a second. And are the symmetrical cone-shaped volcanoes that we typically think of. And they may occur as single volcanoes or secondary of volcanoes, and then they call them parasitic cones, on the sides of stratovolcanoes or shield volcanoes. Airborne fragments of lava, called tephra, are ejected from a single vent. Lava cools rapidly and falls as cinders. That's the little pumice rock, and it's very porous, and that's where it can cause loads of problems to your lungs, air conditioners, motors, airplanes, and all of that. And that's what builds up around the vent, and it forms a crater at the summit. You could actually go to, if you've been to Arizona, there's 5 volcanoes. There's Sunset Crater, and I forgot the other 4. I just happen to know that I climbed, we drove, you could drive to the top of the volcano at Sunset Crater. But the only thing is the last couple 100 feet, you're not allowed to walk up there and fall in the volcano. It's not like you can look over the side and see, oh, look, there's lava. No. There's a crust on top of it. So, but it was pretty cool. And the whole side, they actually made a park. You can go camping at Sunset Crater at the bottom. And all the hardened lava from previous eruptions is still there, and it's pretty cool. Another one that you can go hiking on is called Fat Man's Loop. I don't know why they call it that, but it's pretty cool. So if you ever have the opportunity to go to Arizona, they got 5 of them there. So anywho, cinder cone volcanoes are fairly small, and they're usually only about 300 feet tall, and they don't rise usually more than 1,200 feet. So they can build up over short periods of a few months or a few years, like Hawaii. Hawaii started out as a volcano in the middle of the ocean, and from over the eruptions, the islands got bigger and bigger. Stratovolcanoes are also called composite volcanoes because they're built up of layers of alternating lava flow, ash, and rock, and of unmelted stone, according to a U.S. Geological Survey. They're larger than cinder cones, and they can go up to 8,000 feet. stratovolcanoes result from a conduit system event that are leading from magma reservoir beneath the surface. When dormant, they typically have a steep concave side that shoot together at the top and have a small crater in the middle. And stratovolcanoes can erupt with massive violence. Pressure builds in the magma chamber as gases under immense heat and pressure are dissolved in the liquid rock. And when magma reaches the conduit, the pressure is released and the gases explode. Like if you were to shake a bottle of soda or Coke, Pepsi, whatever you feel like shaking, just like that. Or if you take those friggin' Mentos, apparently, and I want to try this, if you open a bottle of anything that's carbonated, pretty much, and you drop a Mentos in it, it shoots up. That's what happens to the volcano. Because they form a system of underground conduits, stratovolcanoes may blow out the sides of the cone as well as the summit crater. And that's exactly what happened in Mount St. Helens. Instead of coming up the top, it blew up the whole entire side. Approximately 230 square miles of forest was completely obliterated, and 57 people were killed. Over the course of the day, winds blew 520 million tons of ash eastward across the United States, and it caused complete darkness in Spokane, Washington, 250 miles from the volcano. So just think about it. If that's how much damage that Mount St. Helens did, think about how much damage Yellowstone could do. And it's flat. And what would happen is, it would rise up. The land would, and it's already rising up. Certain lakes are getting more shallow, and parts of the park are rising up. And so that would happen. It would come up, and then it would erupt. Shield volcanoes are huge, gently sloping volcanoes built of very thin lava spreading out in all directions from a central vent. And they have wide bases, several miles in diameter, with steeper middle slopes and a flatter summit. The gentle convex slopes give them an outline like a medieval knight's shield. You know how the shields look? Yeah, apparently that's what it looks like. So when those type of volcanoes erupt, they're not generally like explosive. They kind of like go up and ooze. Here it is. The world's largest volcano, Mauna Loa in Hawaii, is a shield volcano. And it's about 55,770 feet tall. But don't forget, that volcano goes into the ocean. So from the floor of the ocean to the top of the volcano, almost 56,000 feet. But from land up, it's 14,000 feet, roughly. So, and it's one of the most active volcanoes, and they monitor the hell out of that volcano. So the last time that one particular one erupted was in 1984, but I believe there's another volcano there because that's the one that was, what was it, last year? That one volcano in Hawaii erupted and it kind of just oozed out, the lava did, but I forgot which island it was on. So lava domes are built up when the lava is too viscous to flow, it's too thick, like syrup. Or molasses, actually. According to the Geological Survey, a bubble or plug of cooling rock forms over the fissure. This cooler, thick lava usually rises near the end of an explosion or explosive eruption, and lava domes often form within the craters of stratovolcanoes. Mount St. Helens has several well-defined lava domes inside the crater. And maybe that's the reason why it blew out the side. It couldn't erupt from the top, and so it blew out the side. So besides well-known symmetrical volcanoes such as Mount Fuji in Japan and Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, volcanic activity is responsible for several other distinctive landforms. Calderas, and that's what Yellowstone is. That's the biggest one. It's a bowl-shaped depression formed when a volcano collapses. So the last volcanic eruption was the Huckleberry Ridge, and the volcano was up. But when all the magma came out, the whole entire volcano collapsed inside because of all of, the weight of the rock and the mountain itself. So what's going to happen? It's going to cave in, and that's what a caldera is. And there are three types of calderas. The first type is a crater lake caldera. This is a result of a stratovolcano collapsing into its magma chamber during a violent eruption. Basaltic calderas have a concentric ring pattern resulting from a series of gradual collapses. So it can have one gigantic one or a bunch of little areas, and it'll have like rings. Hold on a second. And they're often found at the summit of shield volcanoes, such as the craters at the tops of Mauna Loa and Kilauea. Kilauea is the one that was erupting last year, I believe. So resurgent calderas are the largest volcanic structures on Earth, and they're a result of catastrophic eruptions that dwarf any eruption ever recorded by human beings. The Yellowstone caldera is sometimes called the supervolcano. Okay, so they're the ones there is a crater lake, though, so they call it, in Yellowstone Park. But it's, I guess that's what they call it, is a resurgent caldera. Okay, so volcanic plugs are when magma solidifies in the fissure of a volcano. The hard, dense rock may form a neck that remains when softer surrounding rock has been eroded away. And this can result in dramatic landmarks such as Shiprock in New Mexico and the Devil's Tower in Wyoming. Damn, I've never been there. Tuff cones are also known as MARS, M-A-A-R-S. Tuff cones are shallow, flat-floored craters that scientists think formed as a result of a violent expansion of magmatic gas or steam. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, MARS range from a size of 200 to 6,500 feet across. And from 30 to, wow, that's a difference. They could go from 30 to 650 feet deep. And most of the time they're filled with water to form natural lakes. MARS occur geologically young volcanic regions of the world, such as the western part of the United States and the Eifel region of Germany. So lava plateaus, shield volcanoes may erupt along lines of fissures rather than a central vent spilling liquid lava in successive layers. Over time, these layers form broad plateaus, such as the Columbia Plateau, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica. These plateaus are often cut by deep canyons that expose the layers of rock. So if everyone's watched, I don't know, pretty much I've watched every volcano movie there is. You know how sometimes an earthquake will split land when it goes along, like the movie, I think it's called Super Volcano or something like that. I can't remember the name of the movie, but the earth splits from an earthquake, and the lava just oozes through it. Instead of erupting up, it just flows. kind of like if like the Grand Canyon. I know they say the Grand Canyon was a massive lake, and when waters receded, and that's how we got the Grand Canyon. But it would be like that, and then lava flows through that. So AD 79, one of the most famous volcanoes is Mount Vesuvius, which sits along the Bay of Naples in southern Italy. And that's the other volcano that the USGS, not the USGS, the, what you call it, I don't know who would be keeping an eye on it, but I believe everybody is actually, because that's another violent volcano that could end the whole region. It's erupted dozens of times in the last 2,000 years, according to sources. The AD 79 eruption, which that killed Pompeii, and I was watching a show on that actually today. It made Vesuvius famous, but another eruption in 1631 killed about 3,000 people. The thing about Pompeii right now is they found all the places where the bodies were instantly burned. Well, they filled those caverns up with plaster, and they could actually see, they've actually been able to see what the person was doing. They found one that was a soldier. They found a sword that was with him. That's pretty cool. But the problem is over 3 million visitors a year visit Pompeii. And everyone's touching all the buildings. And so because of weather and, you know, just everyday life, they're going to lose Pompeii completely. So in 1669 in Sicily, Mount Etna sent a river of lava flooding through Catania. And it killed, wow, it killed about 20,000 people and in the surrounding area. In 1783, an eruption of Mount I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's in Iceland. It devastated farming and fishing, causing a famine that killed a quarter of the country's people. The thing about Iceland is also, it's growing. They have sensors. Go on YouTube, and this is where I find all of the documentaries. You can find anything on YouTube. But there is one about Iceland, about the volcano and the earthquakes. And they have meters that set up. And Iceland has grown 11 feet. And I don't know how long, a year, I guess, whatever it was, but it's pretty cool. In 1815, whirlwinds and tsunamis from the eruption of Mount Tambora on Sumbawa Island in Indonesia killed about 10,000 people, according to Encyclopedia Britannica. The volcano sent a cloud ejecta into the atmosphere that was more than four times the amount ejected by Mount Pinatubo in 1991. And that's when they went a year without summer. In 1816, in Europe and North America, according to a 2016 paper, climate change. Yeah. I don't think climate change has anything to do with a volcano erupting. But hey, believe what you want. Apparently, climate change is getting a blame for a lot of shit. In 1880, oh, by the way, guys, if you have any, you know, want to say anything about anything, whatever, just chime in, you know. You know the rules. No more free beer.
What?
What? Not anything. If you guys want to know, I'm just going through, this is the types of volcanoes and all this other shit. I know I've gone over volcanoes, earthquakes, and all that, but I found a whole new source of information. So why not?
Right.
And here's the thing. You really can't be prepared for a volcano.
No.
Not really. Well, you really can't be prepared for an earthquake either, but you're better off with an earthquake over a volcano because an earthquake is just localized. Damages buildings and things like that. A volcano will put ash in the air, and it will kill everything within a certain,
right.
You know. And it's like what they're saying about Yellowstone. If Yellowstone does erupt, the thing is the ash may cover 3/4 of America, but it's the poison gases that will go around the world and affect the rest of the world. They won't get the ash. They'll get the rest of the gases and things like that. So, which would put us all in a new, I forget what it's called. It's not a nuclear winter, because nuclear winter from a nuclear bomb, but you know what I'm talking about. It'll drop temperatures 10 degrees, which I'm sure in Texas and stuff like that, they would be more than happy to take that 10-degree drop. But anyway, in 1883, another Indonesian volcano, Krakatoa, erupted and an explosion heard 3,000 miles away. Good God. That's going to be massive. How far do we say it was from New York to California?
Oh, God, wasn't it? Wasn't it right around 3,000 miles?
I think so. Yeah, so that means if Yellowstone,
1,200 miles from me to South Carolina, which that's kind of, but that's like halfway in the middle of the state, so I think it's close to 3,000.
Yeah, I know from New Hampshire to Miami is 1,900 miles. Well, that's because you're going down the whole entire coast. But anywho, so that'd be like Yellowstone going off in Wyoming, and just saying if you could compare it to if it exploded like Krakatoa, that means you, every single person in America would hear that damn volcano. Plus some. Probably over in Ireland, if it's 3,000 miles. I don't know how far that is, but, that must have been massive. 70-pound boulders landed on islands 50 miles away. That must have been a rough awakening. You just sitting there one day and a big freaking 70-pound boulder falls on your freaking head or your house. Just mind your own damn business. And a 130-foot tsunami devastated hundreds of villages, including Java and Sumatra. And about 36,000 people died.
I was close.
Huh?
I was close. It's 2,914 miles. 2,914.2 miles.
So that means just saying if Yellowstone has a massive eruption like Krakatoa, every person in the United States would have heard it. Holy crap. That's massive. And not to mention 3,000 miles the other direction. It's not just going to go one way, you know, because unless you're a flat earther and they don't believe in that shit.
Right.
But dust high in the atmosphere caused the moon to appear blue and sometimes green for 2 years. In 1902, Mount Pele, on Martinique Island, smothered the town of St. Pierre in deadly gas and hot ash, killing almost 30,000 people. And, of course, 1980, Mount St. Helens, and it blew 1,300 feet off its top, killing 57 people. And there was midday darkness about 85 miles away. And in 1991, after 600 years of dormancy, Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines rumbled for days before erupting and killing more than 840 people. and it ejected more than 1 cubic mile. It was 5 cubic kilometers of material, and it buried a U.S. airbase 15 miles away. Damn. And every bridge within 18 miles of Mount Pinatubo was destroyed. Pinatubo's cloud of sulfuric acid, some 20 million tons of it, climbed to more than 12 miles in the stratosphere. Over the next several weeks, the cloud encircled the equator and spread to the poles, covering the entire planet. The particles reflected sunlight and cooled the Earth by nearly a full degree. And that was in 91. I don't even remember that shit. You'd think something that catastrophic would happen. Guess how much I wasn't paying attention. So here's some other significant volcanoes. Lassen Peak in California erupted between 1914 and 1917. It caused no death. It's one of the most likely in the Cascade Range to erupt again. That's the other thing about a Cascade, the Cascade Range. It could, with an earthquake, it would cause a massive tsunami that would go from the West Coast all the way across. I watched a documentary on that too, so go figure. Long Valley, California, the Long Valley Caldera is a 10 by 20 mile depression in the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and that was caused by an eruption, they say, 700,000 years ago. A giant explosion spit out molten rock from 4 miles under the surface, and afterwards the whole mess settled more than a mile down into the depression. So it shot it up, and then it sunk a mile deep. So magma still feeds the hot springs in the caldera. Earthquakes in 1980 marked the beginning of a new activity that includes shifts in the position of the hot springs and swarms under small earthquakes. Geologists say that it probably indicates that the magma is rising again, and that lovely dormant volcano will probably explode again. Mount Shasta in California, the last time they said it erupted was 1786, and they said it goes about every 600 to 800 years. So that's in Northern California. And Kilauea and Mauna Loa, they tend to erupt every 2 to 3 years. But they're not explosive. Like I was saying, they're not explosive at all. Let's see. Okay. That was that. I'm going to say that. And if anybody wants it, just let me know and I'll send it to you. Okay. So. Oh, I hate you? Sorry. My internet has gone all stupid. It keeps doing this, and it aggravates the hell out of me. Okay. So let me go over this, and I don't want to repeat it, so. Okay. How a volcano erupts. I'm going to skim over this one because I know I just covered some of the information. We went over Krakatoa. They compare Krakatoa to Pop Rocks. You know, guys, who Pop Rocks are? That candy,
yeah.
Back in the day, you put your mouth in the pot. Yeah, that's what they compare Krakatoa to. What it does is, so that what they're saying is a super volcano like Yellowstone is like 50 Krakatoas or 1,000 Mount St. Helens. So that's what they're comparing it to. So, let's see. So as much as we fear earthquakes, tsunamis, wildfires, and killer storms, in reality, a few natural events pack the power to knock global civilization on its heels. One is a planet-killing meteor. Well, we know that supposedly there's not one coming, but 74,000 years ago, roughly, Krakatoa's neighboring island, Sumatra, saw a super eruption, let's say, nearly wiped out the human race. So, like Yellowstone, we have no idea. We know that the Toba super eruption produced 670 cubic miles of ejecta, which is about 2,800 cubic kilometers, which they're saying in Yellowstone, there's more than 2,500 now. It's actually grown, but I haven't been able to find out the exact amount. Let's see. Yeah, and so that started a 10,000-year ice age, supposedly. And there's about 30 to 40 supervolcanoes globally, and 6 to 10 of which are potentially active. The one with Taupo, New Zealand, was one of the last ones. And the Fish Canyon Tough event in Colorado, supposedly around 28 million years ago. There is one that you have to pay to go in and see. And I'm like, no. It makes you actually pay to go and see it. I think it's in Colorado. I'm not sure. Or, it could be in Arizona for all I know. But you shouldn't have to pay. Today, North America and South America and Asia face the greatest risk of future super eruptions. And Europe's only known supervolcano in the Flegrean Fields are located across the Bay of Naples, and that's the Mount Vesuvius. But the last time it was Pompeii was the last time it erupted. As we examine supervolcanoes, okay, I already went over that part. I'm not going to go over again. Because they're saying about every 100,000 years in its either direction, and it says it's due, but the one thing you'll notice when you go and watch documentaries on it, the USGS is going to tell you, oh, no, don't worry about it. You can't control Mother Nature. You know what I'm saying? It's like saying you could control a hurricane or an earthquake. You can't. It's whenever the world says, screw you, I'm ready to blow my sack. And that's all there is, and that's all there is to it. And you can't control it whenever it goes. Let's see. Went over that. You guys can chit-chat, you know, while I'm trying to make sure. I find all these articles, and I'm trying not to repeat all the information because I know it's kind of retarded. Okay, so a volcano explosivity index, or a VEI, kind of like how like a category 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on Earth, hurricanes, and how they do the magnitude of earthquakes, that's how they do volcanoes. Super volcanoes commonly occupy the highest VEI category, which an 8 is a VEI 8. Means they produce more than 240 cubic miles of erupted material and a plume more than 16 miles high. Supervolcanoes can rain destruction upon the entire region, and they can leave a caldera the size of Rhode Island, which Yellowstone. I don't know how big Yellowstone is. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to skim through. I don't want to repeat. The thing about, what was I going to say about Yellowstone, the only way to prepare for something like that, if you live within 500 miles of Yellowstone Park, there's not much you could do about all the ash that falls, but I would have, they say have 3 days worth of water and food. I had at least 3 weeks, because by the time they can get to you and dig out the houses and stuff, you know, you won't be able to get out, because you actually have to let the ash fall and then get out. And then you have to worry about your roof collapsing, and that's why they're reinforcing a lot of the buildings in that area within the surrounding area of Yellowstone. Okay. Oh, my bad. Huckleberry Ridge was the first one, and then Mesa Falls, and then Lava Creek. You guys can talk, you know. I'm trying to skim through this. I found a bunch of articles, like I said, and I'm trying not to, which I'm doing anyway, so.
I'm sleeping.
Yes. Oh, no, you're not allowed. Oh, now I know what it was. So in Yellowstone, there is an area where all of the trees have died. It's getting so hot. They're having some of the swarms of earthquakes, and the lava's coming up, and the sulfuric acid and all the other gases. The trees burnt so bad they look like charcoal. You go on YouTube, it's a 9-minute video. I want to see if I could find it. Hold on a second. It's really quick. Oh, no. It's a woman, and she keeps up with the USGS, and she does kind of like we do the blog talk, but she has her own YouTube. That's the History Channel, yada, 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 yada. Never mind. I can't find it. Oh, well. It's a 9-minute video. But she has a bunch of them. And they're having, like I said, they're having harmonic tremors, which is not a good thing. And they can stop as fast as they start. Don't get me wrong. That's what they, according to volcanologists. As soon as the harmonic tremors start, they can stop. And Yellowstone sits on a long active tectonic zone, a weakened and thin crust overlaying 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit magma dome that rises from the upper mantle. So it's got, like I said, it's got two magma chambers now. And it's roughly 5 miles below the Earth, below the Earth's crust. It measures roughly 30 miles across. So now there's two of them, not just one. And so there's magma, semi-solid rock, dissolved gases like water vapor and carbon dioxide. So over centuries, additional magma will build up, and that delivers more heat and pressure, and it pushes the overlaying ground upward little by little. And if the chamber receives a steady and substantial supply of hot magma, the pressure builds, and often a silical process called incubation If it doesn't, then some material solidifies and sinks, and that removes the pressure. It's kind of like, what you call it, Old Faithful. Every 90 minutes, Old Faithful will spew up hot water. And that's because it has to fill back, the chamber has to fill back up, and the magma underneath heats it up and then goes, well, that's kind of the same way. And if it doesn't erupt, it sinks back down and stuff like that. So the sheer volume of a supervolcano's magma chamber means that incubation requires a heat delivery rate of 2 to 3 orders of magnitude greater than that of a traditional volcano. Eventually, overflow pressure creates fractures along the dome's periphery, venting pressure from the chamber. So the gas-filled magma blasts skyward, which creates pyroclastic flows. It's fast-moving, thick clouds of ash and all that crap. And it goes at almost 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit. So... And it could go tens of thousands of square miles. That's how far that it can go. And then it could still go off for weeks. So that's why they're worried if Yellowstone ever does erupt completely, that it's not going to be just one chamber. It's going to have multiple eruptions in that area. And also how much of it's going to erupt. That's the other thing. It'll blanket the sky with pollutants and crop-killing ash. Until it settles, anyone within thousands of miles, it's like tiny glass needles. And that's why they say you've got to wear like a gas mask or something heavier than this cheap-ass crap we have to wear right now for this pandemic. You know, the little surgical mask, that's not good enough. You have to actually put something good over your nose and your mouth so you don't inhale it and turn your lungs to concrete and die. Let's see. Ash will collapse your roof, pollutes vital water sources, and gums up vehicle engines, planes, helicopters, you name it, it's going to just come to a screeching halt. And it could take months to years to recover from it, from like Yellowstone or Krakatoa or Mount Vesuvius. So within weeks, the dust and sulfate aerosols will encircle the globe. And like I said, the temps will drop about 10 degrees for several years. One third of the U.S., and particularly states of Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, will remain uninhabitable for months or years. Like some of these other volcanoes, have you seen? Yeah, it's going to be bad. But I don't know why it wouldn't come besides Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, because you have Yellowstone is at the top of Wyoming. So, yeah, I could see those three. Because that's within the 500 miles of Yellowstone. Have you seen some of the other, like in the Philippines and all these other countries' volcanoes? It has covered 10 feet of ash. It falls, right? And it will cut, and all you see is the rooftops of a whole entire village. And all they did was build another village on top of that one. So at that point in time, I'd say, you know what, I'm going to just leave. If I lived near a volcano that was not dormant, I wouldn't live there anymore.
No.
You know, like, yeah, I'm done. So the thing is, it doesn't take much for a volcano to erupt. Like, though 50 times smaller than a supervolcano, Pinatubo Yeah, it only dropped the temp up to maybe 1.5 degrees, and that can cause an issue. You know, not a big deal. You know what I'm saying? It's like, whoopee shit. You know. The thing is, it won't take much for, to say, Mount Vesuvius. Say there's, because of the tectonic plates, like I said, there's 7 of them. So what if there's a massive earthquake somewhere and it starts a chain reaction of eruptions like the Ring of Fire? It won't take much to set off other volcanoes, and that chain reaction can cause other volcanoes to erupt. So it may not be Yellowstone that gets us. It could be, you know, I'm not saying it's going to, but you know what? The way things are going, I'll take a volcano over some of the shit that's going on today. So we covered the modeling, the way they did it. If anybody wants any of this cool information, you can actually go on the USGS, and it's got all kinds of anything you want to know about volcanoes, earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, any of that cool stuff. Let me see what else. I'm looking on here. This is saying the same thing. Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho be pretty much done. Done for. Okay, so let's go ahead and going over earthquakes. Why not? Because that's what's been going on over there anyway. So this is also saying that this other volcano site or whatever even says Colorado and Utah will have issues. And they could have up to 3 feet of ash. So, but the thing is, just say an earthquake, I mean, an earthquake, just say you have a volcano, you're up, and all the ash comes up, right? And you wash it off your roof. That's the dumbest thing you could ever do. Never do that. That would not be something cool to do. So
why not?
Because it'll turn to concrete.
Oh,
it's not like snow. It's not like snow.
Well, I was thinking more like sand.
Oh, no. See,
when water mixes with it, it turns hard.
Hold on a second. Hold on, I'll tell you right now. When volcanic ash gets wet. I'll tell you exactly what happens. Geology.com has this answer. So,
well, imagine that.
Volcanic ash, huh? Imagine that. I know, huh? So, volcanic ash consists of powder size to sand size particles of igneous rock material that's been blown into the air by an erupting volcano. So the term volcanic dust and volcanic ash are both used for the same material. However, volcanic dust is more appropriately used for a powder-sized material. Woo. Okay. Let me look here. So, actually, volcanic ash looks like soft, harmless powder, kind of like cornstarch. From this picture, it doesn't look like baby powder because baby powder looks a little different. Cornstarch is what it looks like. So when it said volcanic ash is powdered rock material, individual particles have a hardness between 5 and 7 on the Mohs hardness scale. MOHS. I have no idea. Never heard of it. The particles are irregular in shape with sharp, jagged edges. And so if you look at what it looks like under a microscope, it looks it's very porous. So one little particle has all these little jagged edges and holes. So combine the high hardness with the irregular particle shape and volcanic ash can be an abrasive material. This gives these tiny particles the ability to damage aircraft windows, be an eye irritant, and cause unusual wear on moving parts of equipment, like cars, helicopters, you name it. We should get to the point. It has a low density. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, so here's the thing. Volcanic ash particles are insoluble in water. When they become wet, they form a slurry or a mud, kind of like, I'm trying to think. What is mud?
Baked cement.
Oh, yeah. Wet cement is exactly what it looks like. But a little thinner.
Bag it up and build some shit. Bag it up and build some shit.
Yeah, hurry up and build shit. Yeah, go ahead. It's kind of like when you take flour and you add water to it, and depending on how much water you add, depends on how thick it is. Well, it's runny, and then it gets thicker and thicker, and then it hardens. That's the problem. So wet volcanic ash can dry into a solid concrete-like mass. So if you think about it, when you have snow on your roof, that's the reason why a lot of northern, or actually all northern buildings, that where they get snow, the roof will be slanted. They will not be flat because I don't know how many feet of snow.
We got flat roofs here. Don't let them fool you.
You do, really?
Yeah. Yep. Wow. They put rubber roofing on it.
So 10 inches of fresh snow equates to about 5 pounds per square foot. Your roof can likely support 4 feet of fresh snow. Now, if it packs, it weighs more. So you get that dense, heavy snow. Let's see, 2 feet or more of old snow is enough to exceed weight limit because it turns to ice, you add new snow, and it packs it and packs it and packs it. That's why if you want to cheat, which really sucks, and you take snow and you dip it in water and it turns into ice and you add snow around it, that's cheating if you're making snowballs. Well, yeah, I know. So I'm trying to find out. Come on. I think it's only like 2 millimeters, I believe. Let's see. I'm trying. Ow.
Yeah, I had snow so thick and heavy when you shovel it, it would turn blue.
You what?
There's that much moisture in the snow.
Oh. I'm trying to find out. Is how much? Yeah, I talked about how much it'll screw up your agriculture, which is everything. I believe it's like 2 millimeters is all it takes to collapse a roof. But that's what immediately after a heavy ashfall, one of the priority jobs is cleaning the ash from the roof of buildings. If rain falls before the ash is removed, it can be absorbed by the ash and increase the weight. Wet ash can have a density of 20 times. So, God, ash. Wet ash, volcanic ash, has a density of 20 times that of fresh snow. So whatever, say, like we're saying, 4 feet or 5 feet of fresh snow, volcanic ash is 20 times that weight in smaller amounts.
Yeah, I believe that.
But I'm trying to find, well, I didn't say because you must be an asshole. Sorry. That's why I didn't answer my question. How much ash to collapse roof? Okay, here we go. Most pastures will be killed by over 50 millimeters of ash. Major ash removal operations in urban areas. Most buildings will support ash, the ash load, but a weaker roof structure. Oh, wow, it's 100 millimeters. I thought it was 2. It's 100 millimeters of ash. Which is, by the way, not very much. let's see. I'm trying to find out. Okay, here it is. So less than 1 millimeter of ash thickness that falls, right, will act as an irritant to the eyes and lungs. Airports will close due to potential damage to aircraft. Possible minor damage to vehicles, houses, and equipment because of the fine. That's like taking that. You look at sandpaper, fine grit to rough grit. Rough grit will just, it will tear shit apart. And your fine grit is when you want to finish something. It's like you could barely feel it. Well, think of volcanic ash as rough grit. Okay.
Yeah. Same as sheetrock. Same as sheetrock dust.
Yeah. And so if you take, just say, I don't know how to grade sandpaper right now to save my life besides fine grit, rough grit, and all that crap. But take rough grit and go sand your car, your paint on your car. Watch what happens. That's what volcanic ash will do to your house or your car. Okay. So possible contamination of water supplies, particularly roof-fed tank supplies. And dust affects road visibility. It's like driving on black ice, pretty much. So if you get between 1 to 5 millimeter ash thickness, possible crop damage, some livestock may be affected. Most will not be unduly stressed out, but may suffer from lack of feed, water, wear on their teeth, and possible contamination of water supplies. Minor damage to houses will occur if fine ash enters buildings, soiling interiors, blocking air conditioning, and stuff like that. Electricity may be cut. Ash shorting occurs at substations if the ash is wet, therefore conductive. Low voltage systems and more vulnerable than high. Water supplies may be cut or limited due to failure of electricity to pump. Contamination of water supplies by chemical, whatever the hell, I can't read that word, may occur. High water usage will result from ash cleanup operations. Roads may need to be cleaned or cleared to reduce the dust nuisance and prevent stormwater systems from becoming blocked. Think about it this way. You go down a dirt road and you wash a car, looks nice and pretty. And you take it down a dirt road and all that shit that gets kicked up, that's what happens after they clean up and why they gotta, you know, clear the roads.
That's my life. I live on a dirt road. Where'd you go?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Good question.
Sorry, my ear. No, my freaking, my earbud fell out and fell in the dog's face.
Good to
So I had to. I only have one in. I don't like wearing two. And so what I was doing is I'm beating the system. I'm charging one while I'm using the other one. And so it fell out and fell into the freaking dog crate. Now what the hell was I saying? Shit. Oh, I don't even know what I'm saying.
Are you still there? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, there you are. What, did you get done with your nap already or what?
Did I what?
Did you get done with your nap?
My name's not Lorna.
Ha! I have to be into work a half hour earlier now.
Oh, no.
Sorry. I had to change. I have no idea what happened.
It's a blonde moment.
No, my friggin', it's why I hate wearing earbuds, but it makes my life a whole lot easier when I do things. But it just freaking shut off, little butthole. So, anywho, so from five, I love how they do this, from 5 to 100 millimeters of ass thickness, burial of pasture and low plant, foliage may be stripped of some of the trees, but most trees will survive. Most pastures will be killed by over 50 millimeters of ash. Major ash removal operations in urban areas. Most buildings can support the ash load. But like I said, the weaker building, so the older your building is or your house or whatever, it can collapse if it gets wet. So if it's dry, it's okay. That's why you got to get up there and brush it off. Use a broom, industrial, you know, whatever, and clean it off. Road transport may be halted due to the buildup of ash. Like I said, when you drive through that shit, it's going to fly everywhere and make things worse. So from 100 to 300, buildings that are not cleared of ash will run the risk of roof collapse, especially if they're flat and if it gets wet. Severe damage to trees and stripping of foliage and breaking of branches, kind of like an ice storm. You know what happens in an ice storm? The branches can only hold so much ice, and they start snapping. If you happen to live, to say, like in East Tennessee, there's like three mountain ranges, and we lived in between two of them, and we had a massive ice storm. I swear to God, it sounded like shotguns were going off. Because the tree limbs were breaking because of the weight of the ice. We had 9 straight days of ice. No snow, just ice. And we got stuck up in the mountains for 9 days, could not get off the mountains. So imagine what volcanic ash would do. So in a lot of times you're going to lose your power because the tree limbs will fall on your power lines and whatnot. If there's over 300 millimeters of ash, pretty much all your vegetation will kill. Complete burial of soil horizon. Most of your livestock will be killed because they won't have anywhere to graze. They won't have, unless you got shit put up, but you won't be able to grow it. Because your soil is going to be covered with ash. Major collapse of a roof due to low ash loading. Roads will be unusable until they're cleared. Kill off aquatic life in lakes and rivers. Unless during the time that the ash falls.
and the river and the and all the fish and whatnot can swim away from. That will be the only way it's saved. But yeah, you can have a complete catastrophic problem from it. Oh, excuse me. So, crap, I got rid of the wrong website. Damn it. Sorry. I was going to go over earthquakes real quick and how they earthquakes. Yep, I could spell. Sorry, guys. Let's see. Well, how about earthquakes, period? Sorry, guys. I had all this, and I just, you know, disappeared. Wow. We've had quite a few earthquakes in Wichita, which we don't even live on a tectonic plate.
I don't get either.
What, you don't get earthquakes?
Earthquakes or volcanoes.
We live on a minor, a very small tectonic plate. I cannot find that damn... Okay, oh, here we go. I'll just go over this. Okay, oh, my freaking kneecap. My knee keeps buckling, and I swear to God I'm going to lose my knee. It's killing me. Okay. There we go. See, you never know what you're going to get on this show from one show to the next, I swear.
Keeps it interesting.
I know.
Keeps you guessing.
That was exactly what... That's right. That's my job. That did not work. Sorry. I hate when you see that you I'm like, great, I got a great article, a great site, and you open it up and it's got questions. I'm like, no, that's not what I wanted. Okay, so here it is. The North American plate. And it combines there's the African plate, the Antarctic plate, the Arabian plate, the Australian plate, Caribbean, Cocos plate, Eurasian, Indian, Juan de Fuca, Nazca, North American, Pacific, Philippine, Scotia, and South American. The Antarctic plate, and I'm trying to think of the other one that's going towards... I have to give you a thing of this because it's hard to explain how this works. So the Earth's major tectonic plates, the outermost part of the Earth's structure is known as the lithosphere. The lithosphere consists of the crust and small portion of the upper mantle. The lithosphere is divided into a number of tectonic plates. These plates move and interact with one another, driven by convection. And that's how we have, because of the friction from your tectonic plate, when one plate goes underneath another one, and then that can cause the upper one to pop up almost like a diving board, to say. And that's how tsunamis are created. Or that's not the only way, but it's the biggest way tsunamis are created. Because of the place of what happened. New lithosphere is created at mid-ocean ridges where plates pull apart and molten material escapes as a subsea fissure eruption. Like I said, you can have not a volcanic eruption, but when the plates come apart, molten lava can come up, and that's how it spreads them apart.
lithosphere is destroyed near ocean trenches where lithospheric plates descend into the mantle and are assimilated into the mantle. And there's a cool picture of it, you know. Okay, so it's called the subduction plate. Is one that's in the ocean, right? And it will go down, and then say your continent. We're going to say which one is this one. I have no idea where this was at. It's going to go underneath, and then that's what causes the trench on the water line or the shoreline. So the edges of the Earth's lithospheric plates have been have boundaries which are both well-defined and poorly defined. Well-defined boundaries include mid-ocean ranges and ocean trenches, kind of like the Mariana Trench, and I believe that's the deepest trench in the world. Navy guy, would you know?
What was that?
The Mariana Trench.
Oh, I know nothing.
Isn't that the... Where's Bobby? Navy guy?
Free beer. Free beer.
Free beer.
Ran away.
Is it the Mariana Trench the deepest trench in the ocean in the world?
So far as I know, yes.
Okay. Oh, and I'm going to tell you about the Ring of Fire, too, because it goes around. Oh, I thought the Ring of Fire was on the East Coast. It's actually on the West Coast. My bad. You learn something new every day. So mid-ocean ridges are divergent boundaries where convection currents in the mantle lift the ocean floor and produce a rift in the lithosphere that follows the crest of the ridge. New lithospheres created by volcanic activity along the crest of the ridge, and the plates on either side of the ridge are moving away from one another, like I said. So the boundary between the North American plate and the Eurasian plate is an example of a divergent boundary. At a mid-ocean ridge, all of the plate boundaries that occur down the center of the Atlantic Ocean are divergent boundaries that follow the crest of the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. And like I said, it's a pretty cool picture. And it shows all of the plates. And then it shows the different ridges. Ocean trenches form where a plate with a leading edge of oceanic lithosphere collides with another plate. In these situations, an oceanic plate normally subducts into the mantle, forming a topographic low on the ocean floor. And the point of the seafloor where the colliding plates are in contact is normally considered to be the geographic location of the plate boundary. So the Ring of Fire goes from down by Peru all the way up South America, all the way up the western United States, California, all the way up to Washington, and then goes all the way up Canada, around Alaska, up, and it connects to the other side of the world. And hold on a second. Ah, there it is. I can read it. So there's the Peru-Chile Trench, Mid-America Trench, Aleutian Trench. I can't pronounce this. K-U-R-I-L-E Trench. The Japan Trench. The Izu-Borean Trench. The Marianas Trench. And that's farther away from the Philippines. And there's the Philippines Trench and the Ryukyu Trench. And then it comes around and goes around the Tongan Trench and the one over there by Madagascar. That's where the Ring of Fire is at. And that's also where the trenches are at, by the way. So some plate boundaries are poorly defined by topographic expression or lithospheric continuities. And these type of boundaries must be plotted on a map showing your approximate locations. At the southern edge of the Caribbean plate, passing through the northern South America is an example of another boundary between the North American plate and the Eurasian plate. But like I said, there's 152 floating plates. I ain't going over all of them. But you can see how all of the plates are. It's pretty cool. I will post this one on our national page because it is pretty cool. And pretty much North America's on one, Africa's got one, Europe is the Eurasian plate, and then it goes around all the way around to China. That's one big massive plate. And Indo-Australia, that's its own little plate, but of course it goes out into the ocean. The Pacific plate is the whole, or the whole entire ocean is. And then there's a South American plate as well. And so it's pretty cool how it has everything there is to know. I mean, this is a pretty cool website. And you could open it up and it goes into other maps and cool shit. But, you know, anywho, that's it. I know I probably confused the shit out of a lot of people. I confused myself. Sorry. Did not mean to do that. But that's all I got. I got enough. Tonight's show was kind of a hit or miss because I wasn't sure what I was going to do it on.
Yeah, you hit and Lorna missed.
That's right. But I'm going to share it right now.
What?
I'm going to put it right now.
What are we ripping on the whole damn show?
The whole show. I said tonight was a hit or miss.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. That's what Bobby said. I'm gonna put this on the group page right now. So if you want to see it, I'm gonna try my hardest. I don't know how I'm gonna do this shit. I may not be able to put it on our YouTube because of in order for me to put it on YouTube, I'd have to do a video of a screenshot of my screen and actually go over it or just kind of like scroll really slow and add some cool music to it, and I could do it that way. But I just posted it to our national page, and it's called Plate Tectonics Map. I swear to God, if I get a fact check on this, I'm getting rid of Facebook. Because they have now admitted to, or the administration has now admitted to deleting anything that seems like misinformation. And God forbid I do that with tectonic plates. I'm just saying. But I will put all of tonight's information on there if you guys want to look it up. Well, I'll figure out how to do the YouTube. I'll figure it out eventually. But that's all, folks. Got quiet all of a sudden?
I eat chocolate chips.
I am really, I'm debating walking a block over. Here's the thing. I live a block from a gas station, a QT, which is like a Love or whatever. I'm debating walking over there and going to get some butter pecan ice cream. Because I want some. But if I get this job as a dean of Newman University, I'm
going
to Dodge, man. I'm moving. I'm getting the hell out of here. I'm not staying.
It's like, hell no. But anywho, I've got my stuff to do my nursing license, so I got to go get fingerprinted and do a background check again. The FBI is going to be like, what the freaking hell is this woman doing? But if I don't get the dean's position job, I'm gonna go back to nursing. I don't care. You know. Okay, so
yeah,
all the crap
yeah.
is posted.
I'm gonna get Lorna down here, and she's gonna learn how to cook for once, without burning stuff.
Oh, you're moving to South Carolina, or North Carolina,
yeah.
or where the? Oh wow.
Yeah.
You're in trouble
Hopefully.
Now, Bobby.
No,
Hopefully
she's in trouble. She just
out,
doesn't know it yet.
It'll be September.
Yeah, okay.
She's the one in trouble. She just doesn't know it yet.
What? What did you say?
You're the one that's in trouble?
I'm not. No. No. Bobby's going to be in trouble with the three of us on his ass all the time.
You're going to learn real quick, Lorna.
Shit. I'm not scared of you.
You say that now.
Oh, shit.
I'll teach you how to cut wood.
Syria has accused Israel of launching a new attack on them after China said they would send support to the area. I'm telling you, we're headed towards World War III fast. Oh, Oregon is still on fire. They said that an area the size of Los Angeles has burnt down because of forest fires.
Oh, yeah.
A house exploded in Texas, and six people were hurt. In Plano, Texas. Damn. That's a massive. Half the house is gone. Yeah. That's kind of ironic, you know, all this strange shit happening. And it all revolves around politics somehow. But they don't know what caused the explosion. But the gas company was there. So, did I send you the information? I can't remember who I sent it to. They now have proof. Remember the blizzard in Texas?
Yeah.
Where they had no power? Companies were paid off. They were paid off to shut the power off.
Of course.
And they say, okay, this is what they say. They're saying it's to conserve energy. No, it's not. So, yeah, they all got bought out, and they've all got paid off to shut the power off. So be prepared because it's going to happen this winter. You'll see. They're going to say,
yeah, there's a lot more going on right now, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going through. Remember I told you about the 9 idiots in Ohio and the one senator who got arrested for the protest? You know why they got arrested? You know what they're protesting over? They were protesting over for the right of black women to vote. Didn't they already fix that problem?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to go through, blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, and so the whole thing with Cuba, Biden said Cubans are not allowed to come to America, but illegal Mexicans can come here because they vote Democrat while Cubans vote conservative. So there is a boat parade. They've already gone to Cuba of Republicans from Florida that went and bought hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars in food and medical supplies, and they took them to Cuba on their boats. Because Biden said he's not going to help. So they drove their boats 90 miles to drop off food and supplies.
Oh.
Yep, and so Cuba's president or whatever the hell he is said the only way they're going to get their freedom is over his dead body. So
he shouldn't have said that too loud.
No kidding. I mean, look what they just did to the Haitian president.
I know.
And he didn't threaten anybody.
Nope.
Let's see. I don't know. This is I'm just trying to flip through so we get a couple more minutes. So making bets on who's going to go first. I don't know if it's going to be China and Japan or Israel and Syria or Russia and the United States. Or China, Russia, and the United States. But I don't know. Kim Jong-un's really pushing to bomb Japan. But I don't think Biden would help Japan, even though we have a peace treaty with them. You know what I'm saying? Because, let's see. Hold on a second. Let me look it up. Yeah, I have to spell. Isn't that the whole point of a peace treaty? Because they have no military?
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Yep. Here it is. And this was today. 7 minutes ago. Oh, no, not 7 minutes ago. That's how long it takes to read the article. This was written, let me try and see when it was written. And because we have an alliance, come on. Oh, I hate all of these stupid, this was today. This article was written today. So, it says, if China and Japan went to war, what would America do? Sit here and wait for this stupid article to open. So basically what it says, wow, they're already, shit, China's already sending their fighter pilots over to Japan.
Yeah, I read that earlier.
Let's see. I'm trying to find out where it says because we have a oh, crap. Japan's already removing their Chinese nationals. They're removing their ambassadors and all that. So it's getting pretty tense. From what, and it says war is imminent.
Yep.
He got the call at 3 o'clock this, last night or in the morning. So, yeah, they say that they doubt it would happen. I don't know. Kim Jong-un said that he's tired of it. And he's going to nuke the shit out of them. But, oh, my God, my shit. Basically, because we have an alliance with Japan, we're supposed to.
Right.
But because Joe Obama is in bed with China, I think he would turn his... Yeah, but see, that's just it. If we turn our backs on Japan... What would happen? Yeah, see, it's after World War II.
Well, see,
yeah.
Again, you gotta look at the strategics.
Yeah.
Who would gain the most?
I know.
I mean, if you look on a map and map it all out strategically, look at what countries would be on top and which ones would be less.
Yeah, see, this is saying, here's another war on the rocks. It's another national security site, and it says the U.S. and Japan needs to prepare for war with China, and this was done in February. This was as of February of this year.
Yeah, I know.
And they're saying China's warning Taiwan, if you want independence, that means war. So right now, Taiwan has 15 of their aircraft around their island.
Yep.
Right now. So, I don't know. Biden would be stupid if China were to attack Taiwan. Japan's going to step in.
Oh, yeah.
And if we don't help Japan, that's going to be it. That will, America will no longer have allies.
Nope.
I know what you're saying. We will no longer have allies if we don't. So,
all right, we got 10 seconds and we're going to get cut off.
Oh, shit. Go ahead. I know you didn't pay attention.
It was awesome. Again, as usual, thank you both for being here. Thank you for putting it on, Kim.
No problem.
God bless you guys. Have a great night.
Good night.
Good night.